The first thing most developers do when approaching a new application, well, after arguing about language and framework, of course, is to think about the data model. Thing is, when you're building a system on Kafka, the data model discussion is different. Danny Traphagen is a systems engineer who helps businesses with successful implementations of the Confluent platform. She's had to help many teams think about how to structure data in Kafka, and she'll share with us what she knows on today's episode of Streaming Audio, a podcast about Kafka, Confluent, and the cloud. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Streaming Audio. I'm your host, Tim Berglund, and today I am delighted to have as my guest in the virtual studio, Danny Traphagen. Danny, welcome to the show.
Hello. It's nice to be here, Tim.
Yeah, great to have you. I've given no introduction at all to you. I just said your name, and that's, I think, honestly, you're a woman who needs no introduction, but in case there are people who don't know you, what do you do? You are my colleague here at Confluent. What do you do here?
That is true. I am your colleague. You did not tell a lie. I am a senior systems engineer based out of the Southern California area. So I cover California and also just the overall Southwest, helping customers to design their overall event-based platform on Kafka.
Yeah. So it seems like I've tried to like map out your territory just on the basis of customer visits I've been on with you. And I know I've been to Phoenix with you and a few different places in LA. So that's my vision of the extent of where you cover.
Yeah, we bounce around the Southwest. That's what we do.
You do. So, and again, the focus of your job is really with customers, people who like want to buy stuff from Confluent. And so they have money on the table to build things. A lot of my work is, you know, I some part of the time I'm talking to customers, but that's just a part of the general, hey, I'm talking to anybody who might want to know something about Kafka broadly. And Confluent platform users are part of that. But what you do, I always feel like the stakes are high because people are like definitely spending money or considering spending money. There are funded projects where engineering teams are like, hey, we have to build something and we have to get it right.
That's absolutely right. So, you know, it is table stakes at the point where I come into the picture. Either folks are considering a modernization project. So there's already an existing legacy application. It's a named project that they want to modernize, or it's a full overhaul across the board. They want to move on to an event-driven architecture. They see the competition doing it, and they see that they want to move into modernity and be part of the party too. Other things happen too, like completely greenfield. They've heard of Kafka. They want piece of the pie. And then also, you know, Kafka transitioning into Confluent deployments, that happens as well. So there's a lot of buckets that tend to exist when I come to play.
Cool. And so the thing, just for the sake of the listeners, by the way, that this isn't any sort of particular sales pitch or anything. So don't tune out. We're talking about technology today. But the thing that I always love about going on like customer visits with you and with other solution engineers is, you know, you get in the room and here's this business and it's a development team or some architects and they're just like anybody else. They're all stressed. They're trying to build this thing and they're excited because it's cool new technology and they want to get it right. And they know their business super well and they start telling you about their problem. And I'm always like, wow, this takes me 10 minutes to just get the basics of what they're even talking about into my head. And then you have to start to map out, all right, how do we map out a technological solution with our stuff that could be valuable to them? But that translating their domain into stuff that we do is super hard and it's exciting. I always love that early part of a meeting like that. So, and that's kind of what I want to ask you about is broadly, I mean, and you and I were discussing this and we were calling it data modeling. Mm-hmm. You've got some stuff going on in some company and that's usually stored as data. And, you know, now that needs to happen inside Kafka. But it's different, right? It's very different. The way we model data in a streaming system doesn't really feel like what we have historically done with databases. So how do you walk people through that? What is that like?
You know, honestly, it's a real mind bend for most folks unless they already have experience with it. And even then, you know, when you're working with Confluent Direct, it can be a little bit of a level up for folks. And I say that with the utmost humility, just because, you know, we eat, breathe, and live this stuff every day, right? And we're honored to be on site with customers who don't. So we get to see what they're doing, actually developing their applications, you know, for their real world use cases. So it ends up being a real meeting of the minds. And so that's exciting, just as you kind of discussed just now. So what it ends up starting to be like, and the most success that I've been able to garner, is when I listen. Honestly, it's a lot about just shutting up and hearing where the customer pain points are. And honestly, just by our presence, we tend to be able to find where there are specific holes, where we can fill some gaps, where we can consult on certain elements to enhance their end product, where there are specific aspects of their pre-existing Kafka deployment that can be also developed for their benefit. There are a number of things that we can do. But the best place to really start when you're working on transitioning into event-based architecture is actually just starting with the DBAs, right? Because the DBAs, if they exist in the organization, sometimes that isn't something that that is in a organization. But if they are there, they tend to have a really good sense with when we're talking about the concept of a data model, right? Those are the folks that eat and breathe and live that stuff day in and day out. And if not a DBA, but someone in the DevOps organization or something to that effect that has a sense of, you know, the queries that are being executed, writes in, you know, reads out, and can give us a sense of sources and sinks so that we can start applying a sense of what the Kafka architecture is going to look like.
I like that. Start with the DBAs. And if there aren't DBAs, then there are. They're just not called that, like you said, right? There's somebody in a DevOps role, or, you know, it's just developers own that function, and then you've got those people on the team who are the database people. It DBA is either a title that somebody has or a role that emerges. And I guess it's easy for you if it's a title, because you're like, hey, bring in the DBAs. And if it's not, you have to kind of suss out, where is the shadow DBA here?
Yeah, generally there's that guy or gal who I'm looking for, right? And that person knows what's going on in the database we're looking for the specific use case or project that we're focusing on, right? So if it's a legacy modernization application, right, it could be anything. You know, we could have some Oracle database and we're modernizing around that, right? Or it could be over time, right? We want to do a phased approach to modernizing around that. And so there's generally somebody on that project who knows it very intimately, and they're happy to share what their specific pain points are and how we could take it from zero to hero.
So I think everybody listening to this a second or third order approximation, everybody knows what an ERD is and mm-hmm. can think of a domain that they know or care about or are working on and could sketch out an ERD that would be, you know, whiteboard quality. That's a thing that everybody knows how to do because we've been trained in that. We've done it. We've all built stuff on databases before. If you were a computer science major, you took a class at how to do it. It's a thing. So when you have these DBAs who come with that skill set or the data-centric developers on the team, they come with that skill set, and I know what it feels like, right? It's the picture you have in your head. And when you start drawing stuff on the whiteboard, you can't help it. Like, maybe you don't like crow's feet notation or whatever, but dang it, you are drawing an ERD. I don't think that's a bad thing, because it's an interesting way to kind of visualize a domain. But how do you take people from there to starting to conceptualize their first streaming system? Like, what are the steps?
That's a great question. And it comes down to understanding where there's an analogous realm within the Kafka architecture, right? So I think realizing that there's a bit of this stream table duality that exists is extremely helpful. And so at least that's how it was for me, right? Understanding that the two are not so disparate, like the data has to live somewhere, right? And how do we get it to live there is helpful. So when I'm talking to these types of folks, if they are so regimented in seeing the ERD, I really like to take a step back and start defining how things look in Kafka, how they're ordered, how they're structured in Kafka, right? And so if that means doing a Kafka 101 and breaking it down to, you know, what a topic is, then we can start there.
What is the stream table duality? I've heard that phrase. Maybe I've heard that phrase out of my own mouth, but how do you explain that to people?
That's honestly a great question. So when we start talking about kind of what a stream is, I think it's really good to, instead of boiling the ocean and going straight into stream table duality, which is, you know, a couple of words put together that can sound imposing. It's really not when you break it down. But a stream is different than how we visualize a table, right? A table is very static as a point in time, whereas a stream is a series of events. And so when we say that we are in a event-driven architecture, what we mean by that is everything is captured as an action, right? So Kafka is broken down as a immutable distributed commit log. Again, a lot of imposing words put together, but when you break it down, it's super simple. Each log is just an event, right? It's an action. Danny opened the door. Danny then closed the door. It was too noisy outside, right? And so all of these things end up being insights that happen, but they're all just events that happen in an ordered log. And that's our Kafka, right? And so that's just a stream is a collection of those events. So once I start collecting all these events together, Danny opened the door, Danny closed the door. Too noisy outside is my analysis of what happened. All of these things end up being our stream. Now in a table, it's a bit different, right? Because a table is just a capture of what happened. So I might just see in my table that the door was open, because that's a moment in time capture. And it takes some time to get the next visualization, which is that the door was closed. So they're different in the way that they capture things, because a stream is a series of those events playable over time, and they're immutable, right? In Kafka land.
Yeah. So that's, and in the real difference. Life, as we know, sometimes quite tragically, events are immutable.
Yes, quite tragically they are.
you can never take those words spoken in the heat of the moment. You can't take them back.
That's right.
Okay. So I like the door example for stream table duality, because I can record the sequence of things that you do with the door. You open it, you close it. And you're going to do that a lot. You're going to go in and out. That door is going to have those events that happen to it. And those events just happen and we remember them, but we're less accustomed to think of that event stream and more accustomed to think, you know, we've got this domain object called room and it's got this other object in it called door. That's a part of the aggregate. A door has this property of open or closed, mm-hmm. and the state of the door object changes. So the table centric view of the world is what's the state of the door right now?
That's right.
Okay. Which isn't bad. I mean, I've thought about this, and it's, you know, on the one hand, yeah, the world is a sequence of events, but on the other hand, there are things out there, and sometimes it's nice to know what's up with the door, right?
Yeah, no, it is good, but the way that the table and relational view kind of structures itself is to say that the command is really the first class citizen, right? And more so in the world of streams, we're worried about the event. Right? We're event motivated. We want to know what happened.
Gotcha. So step number one in getting a team to start thinking clearly about how to model data in Kafka is to convince them to start thinking about events. Not exclusively about events, but that events are primary, and then we build up views of those events to show state later. So
you got it. That's the Kool-Aid.
That's the Kool-Aid.
That's right.
Is there a just from your experience doing this, so I occasionally teach a workshop at conferences where I take people through an exercise like this, okay? And my version is lower stakes. I mean, it matters because they've volunteered to spend their time and they expect to learn something and they're here at a conference and they paid for it and all that stuff. But it's not like, you know, there are 10 architects in the room and they're trying to decide how to set direction for their $10 million project. You know, it's just a conference thing that we do for an hour. And a question I ask them is, you know, think of an ERD of a system that, you know, draw it out and then, you know, try and think what are the tables in there that aren't really tables, you know, that they're not the important thing about the table isn't a view of state, but the important thing is that there just are these events happening. So do you see a struggle that people go through when they're starting with tables? And like, if you give them that door explanation, they're going to get it. That's very good. You're very good at explaining things like that. But do you then see them struggle with, okay, what are the things that are events and what are the things that are state in my system?
Yeah, because it's a deconstructionist view of the world, right? You know, I have lived this whole life with tables, right? And in a relational uh-huh. context. And so, you know, it's a big paradigm shift to start thinking away from that. And it's also an investment to start shifting from the database being my source of truth to a messaging system being my source of truth, right? So there's a struggle also of what do I keep in Kafka and what do I keep in the database? And so that's generally where the logic starts to break down and hair starts to get pulled a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And how do you get people over that? I'm hoping this is one of these questions I'm hoping to learn because I don't necessarily know.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, it's a bit of an evolution, right? So it starts a little bit higher up in the organization and it's an iterative process. And the answer honestly is a little bit more zen than you might realize. It's about going slow, right? And it's about kind of where the organization is at and what makes sense for them. Because, you know, it doesn't, for some organization, it doesn't make sense for streaming to be the only, you know, centralized part of their business, right? They need other components. They have legacy dependencies that must always live there, right? So for some businesses, you know, cell towers must always require that they have this legacy application that must always be hosted, right? And I'm just musing on a possible example, right? But there's plenty that a legacy application must always exist. It must always be on. It must always live. And so, you know, the database will still be there. They will never offload from that legacy app. But there are others where it will become the heart of the business and they will offload, right? And so it just really depends upon the use case. So it generally this hair pulling exercise does occur, but it really comes down to the specific use case. And instead of boiling the ocean, I like to try to help consult and pull back from saying, okay, like let's not paint the world in Kafka for this initial use case. Let's just focus on this one use case being successful, right? And then we can talk about expanding. And that's generally the key to success, right? It's about taking this initial use case and seeing how we can make this initial use case successful, and then seeing what other additional use cases really can support this modality of thinking. So
cool.
That's generally how I approach it and have had success with it. And normally what we see is that once you can grok the first one, you can write the applications the right way, right? You get the entities, you understand how to write the app in the right way. Because there's a lot of other things you and I haven't even teased out in this conversation yet that become important to sustain. And it's a real shift in thinking like we discussed. And so once you get through this first initial use case, you can start to think about how things transition. But yeah, you're right. It is a little bit of a shift of mind.
Yeah, it sure is. So I'm going to assume that basically everybody listening knows what a topic is, you know, ordered collection of messages. I always somewhat in an attempt to be a little bit cute, I always tell people, here's all you need to know about data modeling in Kafka. Messages go in topics and messages are key value pairs. There, you're done. And you know, if you're then it comes time to show people like the schema registry and the actual problems of schema management and migration in serious enterprise projects. And turns out there's a little bit more, but it starts there. Like, you can start people with, it's just a key and a value pair, and keys matter. And this always strikes me as an important data modeling thing. So tell us why keys matter and maybe some stories about helping people think about how to pick keys and how to build keys and all that. What does that role play? What role does that play in data modeling?
Yeah. Keys are really important, right? So a key is a way that we specify where our messages go. So one of the very important aspects of Kafka that differs it from, you know, a queue, right, is that it's distributed, right? So what do we mean by distributed? When we talk about topics, just like you referred to, a topic is simply our container of streams, and it's split into partitions. And like we say, partitions is kind of how we scale Kafka, right? And so as soon as we start talking about partitions, people tend to get freaked out because now we're in, you know, the distributed systems nuclear fallout land. And
we are.
That is scary, right? All of a sudden, the hair on the back of my neck starts standing up and people are like, partitions, wait, I missed my message queue. I was safe there.
Yes, you were. And you also couldn't build anything all that big.
No, I couldn't build anything big, right? And I couldn't scale horizontally and I wasn't so fault tolerant, right? So there's some things that we get from this, like parallelization from our consumers and other things that are great about partitions. And so I'm not going to pretend, though, that, you know, writing distributed systems applications is a simple task, because it's not. But, you know, partitions do afford us a lot. However, one thing that you have to think about when you start moving into a distributed mode is that now I have multiple brokers. I have partitions which contain my key value pair so that I can obtain my messages, right? And so since multiple brokers contain my messages and I have something called a replication factor value, which contains my messages so that I can reconcile which message is the true message, and that is a factor of my distributed system, I must have a way of figuring out what key I have, rather than doing this round robin thing. So as we start to scale our system, it becomes a performance issue when I'm trying to search for my data amongst my broker nodes. So this ends up being a modeling concern of a distributed system like Kafka. So the key is important for a way of specifying our message rather than round robining to our various Kafka brokers. It's basically a way of, you know, intelligently load balancing. So
right.
That's pretty much the answer there. We want to consider how we're going to design our topics, right, as the superset. And then as we drill into that, how we split up our partitions numerically, because a lot of people find that, you know, they might just think of it as an arbitrary number. And then all of a sudden, this use case was really successful and things grew a lot and they either planned too little or too many, you know, and one's a little easier than the other in Kafka land. And then, you know, your keys as well, round robin tends to be very taxing when you're just bouncing from node to node and looking for your data from a performance hit perspective.
Right. Ordering, you know, that the key is, not just balancing load among brokers, but also telling you which messages you're going to have in order. You know, you have anything with the same key in order. So picking that key seems to matter a lot.
That's right.
Yeah.
One of the nice things about Kafka, right, is that you also you get ordering, right, being that it's an ordered distributed commit log, but you do need to specify, you know, your keys to actually be able to optimize off of that, right?
Right. How about some things, that's all stuff that we do well and that all exists right now, but mm-hmm. I know there are some things that come up. Like in, you know, when there's a big organization and it's a big project and there's a lot on the line, things like data governance and data lineage come up. How do you handle those? What's the story with those? That's kind of like higher level data modeling, but it's a thing.
Yeah, yeah. So when we start getting into kind of the business requirements, when you say data governance generally means there's security requirements, and the security team is going to be involved. and so there's generally some specific security, like a list of security concerns that have been raised for governing the data. And those generally come in a couple of different buckets. There's either compliance concerns or there's specific concerns around how to handle the data. And so we tend to try to have meetings with the security team along with the business requirements to make sure that those things are met. But also, you know, in the application development stage, it's important to ensure that, you know, you meet those considerations. This is the part of the discussion that isn't as sexy for folks because governance tends to be one of those things that
can I just say you're so right? Because, but here's the thing, and this is a weakness with me, right?
Yeah.
That I think data governance is a lame topic. That is not a problem with data governance. That's a problem with me.
Yeah.
Okay?
And people get bored.
Absolute symptom. They do, and they can't, right? It's I have to check myself on this because I have a background as an application developer. I tended to kind of exist outside of the enterprise during the time that I was doing that work. And this was just not a thing in my life. I'm like, okay, where's the framework? Where's the, you know, where are the services? How am I turning my JSON into database queries and my database queries back into JSON? I just never did that, right? And so very, very typical of the application developer, you think, oh, governance, that's for DBAs or some lame team.
Yeah.
But guess what? Once again, when there is a large organization, when the stakes are high, yes, it matters. You can't dismiss that. I can't dismiss that. So anyway, go on. I wanted to confess my own lack of excitement about data governance, and I need to get better at that.
Yeah, and generally it means more meetings, right? And so whenever that word comes up, you know, I see faces go white, and the look on the faces go grim. And
it's, so it's literally the Battle of Five Armies at that point. You know,
that's right.
We got the trolls, we got the orcs, we got the yeah. elves.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. So you know, I'm chartered in those situations to just try to make it easier on folks, or as easy as I can, right?
Yeah. Is there any how do you do it that you can talk about, like in the current state of things, and where do you think it ought to go in the future? And by the way, a little hashtag safe harbor for everybody. When I ask somebody like Dani where she thinks it should go in the future, I mean, hey, in your opinion, what do you think would be cool? I don't mean Confluent Platform will have this feature ever. Okay, so
yeah.
We're just talking here, but what's it like now and where should it go?
Yeah, no, I like your full disclaimer mode. So with data lineage and governance, I think it would be really nice if, you know, right now, basically as an application, you need to manage it. Right. So you need to figure out what the specific needs are for your use case and manage that in the application. That's how it exists today. Right.
Got it. That tells me that typically in a big organization, that means nobody is allowed to use a direct Kafka API, but somebody's using a wrapper, and that wrapper is going to wield the club there.
That's exactly right. There's a really good blog post now that I think about it though. And it's by Neil Avery. He has one, I think it's part four, the four pillars of event streaming microservices. And he talks a bit about this with regard to a payment system application. And so we can think about data lineage, right, and data governance heavily when it comes to, you know, payment apps, because it comes up a lot, right? Banking and financial institutions have to manage this. And they're the ones probably who know it with the highest of expert levelness.
Oh, yeah. Because there are, in many cases, for their domain, it's not just a good idea, it's the law.
Correct.
I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And I will say, if you have not read Neil Avery's series on the four pillars of event streaming, we can still be friends. But like a good friend, I'm telling you that you should go read it. So that link will be in the notes.
Yeah. So that specifically actually has some examples of this, of which we speak. So I think it would be good on you to check it out. But, you know, without getting into the nitty gritty of that, you know, if you haven't yet read it, a little bit of kind of an umbrella view would be that I think Confluent would benefit from having kind of a in its single pane of glass view, you know, a way of managing kind of almost like MDM, right? Like, where did this metadata come from? Where is it going to? What's the story with my data lineage, right? So what was modified from where? Because a lot of times in, you know, the Kafka ecosystem, right? I have some source data going to some sync data, and I don't just want to know like where it came from and where it's going to. I want to know what was changed, right? And I want to know how it was changed. And this is a common story that comes up as a request from many of my customers, right? So that's kind of what we mean when we say data lineage. And so that would be something that would be really nice to have in the tool in the future.
Yeah. Which is another thing, again, that needs to happen and happens in the application layer. You build that. And there's little bits of support sprinkled here and there. Like, there's things in Kafka Connect that help you do that, but it's not a comprehensive feature, and it gets built. And this is one of those things where, like I see, looking back at Kafka over time, and as you look at the evolution of Kafka, and then, you know, the inception of Confluent and how the Confluent platform is evolving, and what you see is. And I mean, this is probably not that profound an insight. I think everything works this way. But like, okay, here's this distributed log. You know, it's 2012, right? Here's a log, everybody. Oh, cool. You know, could it replicate? Oh, yeah. No, okay, now it replicates. Oh, nice. We keep writing this same data integration code over and over again. Here's Kafka Connect. You know, you get that. And then, wow, our consumers sure are complicated. Oh, here's Kafka Streams. You know, we find these things that are hard, and everybody builds their own buggy, not quite fully their version in the application layer. And then the platform grows that feature. So I think it'll be interesting to see, with respect to governance and lineage, how those features creep up into the platform. Because you can tell, you can see when you meet with customers and everybody's building their own, right? Globally, that's a waste of resources. Like, somebody should build that in a general way once.
That's right. Yeah. And honestly, that's kind of part of our MO, right? So we love the notion of, you know, transform once, use many times.
Right.
So why not bake that in, right? Not reinvent the flat tire, but like truly, you know, build something when we see our customers using it, benefiting from it. You know, we see honestly at Kafka Summit, a lot of wonderful ideas come to light. So if we can figure out how to build something in our platform that could benefit a lot of people, I think that, you know, that ends up being some of our greatest inspiration, right? And we truly have only seen so far when we stand on the shoulders of giants in that way. And I think that that's where a lot of our greatest inspiration has come from, is our customers being our partners. And so I know that, you know, some of my best customer relationships are when, you know, they let us know, like, hey, it would be a great enhancement if we had this in the tool, or if we had that in the tool. And so that's kind of where a lot of, you know, our best inspiration does come from.
How about a more open kind of future question?
Yeah. You know,
governance and lineage, those are going to creep up in there. But what else do you see besides governance and lineage? What else are people building in their producers or consumers, or in their streams apps? Like, what's all the repeated stuff that needs to grow up into part of the platform?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, let's go with kind of like an example, right? So let's say we have like a grip of smart meters, you know, and they're publishing to a smart_metered Kafka topic or something like that, right? Over some interval T. And we're going to start, you know, consuming from our Kafka topic, and we have an app to bill our customers for usage, right? And this is like a simple IoT Kafka use case, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. We see this over and over again, and you know, IoT isn't going anywhere. I think that that is almost like to the effect of big data, a dead horse that's been beaten into a bloody infinite pulp.
but it's and like you feel embarrassed to say the word, but in reality, it is referring to some real set
some
of
real
states
thing.
Of affairs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what I see a lot, though, is that because Kafka has gotten so popular, that people want a way of querying, right? So they want a way of knowing what is going on with those meters that they just put into Kafka, right? So, you know, not only are they doing all their billing off of it, right, because that makes sense to do. They have subscribed to, you know, this event architecture, this event-driven design, but now they build a new app where they're doing more analytics, right? Or they want to gauge their meter outage and their meter health, right? And so, you know, I see in the future, really, you know, that stream table duality that we addressed before becoming more important and people wanting to kind of actually store more data in Kafka in perpetuity. So, you know, I see in the future, because KSQL now exists, ad hoc queries becoming more of a notion, where KSQL as it exists today is very much, and since we haven't introduced this before, I'll describe KSQL. That's Kafka's query language, so to speak. But really what it is it's a continuous streaming engine. So it allows you to do stream processing off of the query, basically off of your data that's in Kafka. So it's not an ad hoc query language. You know, it's not SQL, even though it's KSQL. and so really what people, I think, are going to want to be doing in the future is be able to do more ad hoc queries, like see what that 2D state is in real time. And so it's almost a little bit like I could anticipate with my crystal ball, and I could be totally wrong here, so I'm just musing off of your question, right, that people are going to want to see a little bit of ad hocness off of their real-time flows, right? And be able to kind of get that database functionality off of Kafka, because I think they're going to be putting more data in it.
Yeah, because people seem to be building. I mean, the world, you said at the beginning, the world needs databases. That fact is not changing. The world will always need interesting databases, and it's unlikely that Kafka is going to grow a full set of relational database features anytime soon. So that's all cool, but people are kind of using this underlying commit log and building up, you know, views of data and doing, you know, databasey things in their services. And it seems like, I think what you're saying is, they're having to reinvent a lot of the wheel there, and that would be an interesting place for the platform to grow into higher level APIs of some sort to make that more pleasant.
That's right. Because I think, you know, one of the things that exists is that, you know, you basically have a lot of SQL equipped folks, right? A lot of relationally equipped folks that are growing into the streaming culture. And, you know, do you meet them halfway? How do you accommodate that, right? And I think that's an interesting question, you know? So how do we visualize what exists today, right? And how do we show that? And do we provide a persistent store? Do we not? You know, how does this look over time? Is there a way to have longer term retention of our data that lives in Kafka? Because it's great to have Kafka data for a certain amount of time, but what if we want to do longer term?
Economically viable long term. I mean, because you can make it infinity, but it's a little bit expensive to keep it on brokers.
That's right. Kind of a notion of hot and cold data.
Yeah. Okay. That'd be an interesting thing to see. Well, my guest today has been Danny Traphagen. Danny, thanks for being a part of Streaming Audio.
You are so welcome. It's been a pleasure, Tim.
And there you have it. I hope this podcast was helpful to you. If you want to discuss it or ask a question, you can always reach out to me at TL Berglund on Twitter. That's at TLBERGLUND. Or you can leave a comment on a YouTube video or reach out in community Slack. There's a Slack sign-up link in the show notes if you want to register there. And while you're at it, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and to this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. And if you subscribe through iTunes, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover the podcast, which we think is a good thing. So, thanks for your support, and we'll see you next time.